because the statistics are still pretty dismal. Mm-hmm. And it's staggering to me because women make up 50% of our population and usually the audience. When you look at stats at the end of the year, it's usually a little over 50% have been women. So there's an audience, and I get you know, frustrated that a film like Bridesmaids comes along and it's suddenly this big anomaly, and it doesn't have to be. There are audiences out there for this stuff, so.
Hello! You're listening to the Ink and Paint Girls podcast, where we celebrate women working in animation, illustration, and comics. In an effort to share their stories, we not only cover the steps they have taken to get to their dream jobs, but also the struggles. We highlight artists, writers, and producers, explore the ups and downs of working in the industry, and discuss female representation behind the scenes and on the screen. Deirdre Brenner is an animation producer with a career spanning 20 years on projects such as Fairly Odd Parents, Pepper Ann, Star vs. the Forces of Evil, and so many more. However, even with this extensive experience in producing, she has been nurturing a screenwriting career on the side, entering screenwriting competitions and currently in talks for one of her scripts being optioned by a production company. I'm excited to share this interview with you because Deirdre is a perfect example of someone who has a successful career but is also nurturing a second one.
Well, I came out to L.A. in 1991, mm-hmm. so I'm dating myself.
Somewhere.
I grew up in Wisconsin, in Madison, and I went to school at Northwestern outside Chicago, and I always knew I wanted to be in entertainment. So after I spent the summer at home, I packed up my car, and my dad and I drove across the country to L.A. And so I started temping immediately, and I found companies that catered to the entertainment industry because I knew that's where I wanted to be. So I temped for a couple of years, and I landed in a lot of different divisions of Disney. I've temped at Imagineering and Studio Operations, and accounts payable, which was pretty dull. But when I landed at TV Animation, that was a division I was like, oh, I love this. I feel like I fit in well here. I love being around artists. It was so creative. It was a really exciting time, too, in animation because Beauty and the Beast was just coming out that year, the film. So now I think TV was starting to think about just how to kind of franchise these great films. And so there was a lot of growth happening. But I just totally dug the environment and the people. So I knew, you know, after temping for so long, I thought, all right, if I'm going to commit to something, this is the kind of division I'd love to work in. So I put that out there in the world, and a position came available. I'd been temping in the legal department, as you know, Miss Suzanne Prescott. I filled in for her. She was out for a little while. And so it was really good insight into contracts, and I got to see a lot of the contracts in play, and that was a good education. And then the job that opened up in the division was in the finance department. And granted, I was more interested in production, but I thought, well, I just want to get my foot in the door. So I was the department secretary, and that also ultimately was a good education for moving on up through production and to eventually becoming a producer, because you're dealing with invoices, you're dealing with contracts. So I got a good early education into all that stuff. And I was the department secretary for about a year. But meanwhile, I was getting to know the different people in production. And then a PA spot opened up on the Lion King's Timon and Pumbaa show. And so I said, please hire me. And I interviewed for the job and I was able to transition. They gave me the job. And so once I was in production, I was just hooked and made a lot of friends and learned a lot. And just, and that was a really nice show to be on. It was run by Bob Scanaway and Tony Craig, but they also had two other showrunners, and that was, or I guess directors, Jeff DeGrandis was one and Rob LaDuca was the other. So it was just like this dream team of producers who really knew what they were doing. And
they're still around.
Yeah, they're still working and very successful, rightly so, in the industry. So it was a really good training ground for me. Michelle Robinson, who is one of the directors of production at TVA, Disney TVA, she was my production manager when I started. So she was a great mentor to me. I mean, she's such a great person and I love her management style. And so I'd like to think I learned a lot from how she treated the crew and the artists. So that was the beginning. And then eventually I was a PA for a couple years and then a production manager spot opened on the Mighty Ducks, which again was another franchise. Disney had just bought the hockey team, and so they thought they would try to create a cartoon series, and I think it ran two seasons, but that was a fun one too. And Lisa Salamone, who's the, I think, senior VP or at least VP of production here, she was the associate producer on that show. So she was another great mentor to have, and I learned a lot. So it was just years of kind of working my way up. My last position at Disney, that run, was as an associate producer on Jungle Book, or Jungle Book 2, I should say. So that was a direct-to-video. And I was there for, gosh, maybe a year or so. But I was getting a little antsy and I felt ready to take it to the next level. And that project was a challenging one, to say the least. So I kind of kept my eyes open for what else was happening in the industry. And a friend of mine, a dear friend, Monique Beatty, who's director of production at DreamWorks TV now, she was at Nickelodeon at the time and told me about a line producer opening on The Fairly Odd Parents. So I went in and interviewed and got that position. So I was able to work with the Butch Hartman empire for over 9 years. I was at Nickelodeon a long time and worked on a number of seasons of Fairly Odd Parents. I was with him when he did Danny Phantom and also Tough Puppy. So, and he also had a few pilots that he tested. So it was that too was just a great training ground. And that was exciting because at that point I was really empowered as a line producer and I was working with Butch to establish the schedule and the budget and do the hiring and unfortunately the occasional firing, things like that. But Nickelodeon was fantastic. That was also an exciting time to be there because the division was doing really well. SpongeBob was a huge hit and, you know, who doesn't love SpongeBob? And Fairly Odd Parents was really successful. So it was just a really creative time. And again, Butch brought in some really incredible artists like a Kristen Doner, who you mentioned before. Mm-hmm. But Bob Boyle was art director for a while, and then George Goodchild took over for him. Dave Thomas on storyboards was just amazing. Ernie Gilbert is a great character designer, and he eventually was an art director. So a lot of really good people and really nice people. So I enjoyed Nickelodeon a lot. And then I took my 2-year sabbatical to do some writing because, as you know, my true passion is screenwriting, and I hope to write and produce live-action films. someday. So I had the ability to take a couple years off, and I took advantage of it, and that was great. And then I got back to work at Disney. A little show called Star versus the Forces of Evil got a pickup. And so I was tapped to come on as line producer. And I did that for a year. And then a friend I had worked with on Jungle Book 2 contacted me about The Land Before Time, Journey of the Brave. Yep, 14. And so this is a producer I've worked with, Lisa Melby, and she's also a very good friend, another great mentor and colleague, of a woman I really admire. So I took advantage of the opportunity to work with her again and work on a direct-to-video. I liked kind of getting back into that arena. So I did that for a year and a half until we finished the film and we delivered it last November. And then I've been on sabbatical ever since, but I'm getting to the point where I need to start looking for work. So that process is starting. But again, it was great to have a nice chunk of time to go back to my writing and finish a couple scripts. So
did you visit home too?
I did. I was home a few times. I would have loved to have traveled even more. I did take a big trip right when Land Before Time ended. My sister lives in London, so I love that city. So I went there for the month of November, which was fantastic. And that was really just, it was fun to hang out with her and her husband. Monique Beatty, who I mentioned before, she came out for Thanksgiving. She happened to be making a trip around that time. So we spent Thanksgiving together, and another friend of ours, Kevin Sullivan, who's a writer on The Loud House, he was there too. So that was fun. It was just a glorious month. And I also got some writing done. And then came back in December and knew I wasn't going to work the rest of the year, but it's somehow extended into July. So, yeah. But I love traveling. So I would have loved to have done some more traveling. But when you are on a hiatus, you're also watching your bank account. So I couldn't do quite as much as I would have liked to. But it was good to get the trips home in and also to see my sister and brother-in-law in London.
Nice.
Yeah.
So when you were a PA, you had mentioned that production manager position open. So did you go from assistant to manager?
I think I was a PC for maybe a few months in between. Mm-hmm. But it was one of these situations where, I mean, sometimes it's truly just being in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. And Mighty Ducks had already started, but their production manager left suddenly. And so they were scrambling to find someone, and they wanted someone who kind of knew the Disney way. So they came to me and asked me if I'd be interested, and of course I wasn't going to pass it up. Yeah. I should also mention, as a PM, I worked on Pepper Ann, which was fun. That was the first season of that show, and I think that's the first TVA show where a woman created it and was the showrunner, Sue Rose. And she was just such a sweet person. And so that was exciting to work on that. But yeah, it was truly just luck. Hopefully it was my abilities and I had proven myself enough as a PA to PC. And I think too, they knew they were pairing me with a really strong, at the time, associate producer. I mean, Lisa was essentially line producing it, but they knew in pairing me with Lisa Salamone, I'd be in good hands, and I was. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Definitely through all your entire journey so far, you have really strong connections with people. Like, what does that come down to? Just being a nice person? Or, did you on purpose, nurture these relationships? Or how do you work, like, networking and just having, like, real just relationships with people?
Well, I think a lot of it just comes down to being intuitive about people. and being sensitive. I grew up doing theater. I love writing. I like being around creative people, so I think I'm attuned to what makes them tick, especially since I have my own creative endeavors too. So I think it's important to be nice and just to be respectful. And unfortunately, sometimes you have to lay down the law too, but I think if you try to do it in a respectful way, people can't begrudge you that. But I hope I nurture these relationships. When I'm on a crew, I'm a big proponent of having the occasional Friday after work party in the lounge, and you know, it's always fun celebrating the holidays with the crew and doing events. So I think that's important for morale too. But yeah, I hope that answers your question. Yeah.
Well, it's just, how do you do it? You know?
Yeah.
It's not like black or white.
I think it's just trying to be a good communicator and being sensitive to what people need. As a producer, I never try to be someone who watches the clock and is, you know, staring at my watch when it's after 10 to, you know, I don't want to have to berate anyone if the work gets done. Like, 'cause I know how it is when you're trying to do something creative. It's not always a switch you can flip on. It can sometimes take a little while to get in the groove, and I think you have to just be sensitive to how different people work and, you know, and then maybe get a little more rigid when you need to. Mm-hmm. But generally, I really want to create a nurturing, easy environment so that people aren't feeling stressed or, you know, constantly watched. I don't like being micromanaged, and I don't want to have to do it to anyone else. I actually just saw a filmmaker, his name's Nate Parker. He's got that film, The Birth of a Nation, coming out this fall, and it won Sundance. It was a huge success, and I got to see him speak at a panel, and he said when it came down to hiring his crew, he just remembered the mandate of hire the best and get out of the way, and I think that's a really good philosophy to follow, so... Yeah.
How do you schedule for maybe someone who's taken advantage, though? Like, maybe they're one of those eccentric creatives?
Right, right. I'll give people some leeway, but if deadlines aren't being met, then we'll have the serious heart-to-heart, because at the end of the day, it is a job. There is a schedule. It's show business, unfortunately. We're not, it would be lovely if we could all just be paid to just do our art and writing and whatever, with no kind of structure to it. But that's not how it works. And I always like to give people the chance to succeed or fail. So I'll have that conversation with people. And also, I try to be aware of when an episode or a sequence in a direct-to-video, if it's too demanding to fit into what might be the rigidity of a schedule. And I think that's part of being a good producer, is you look at your scripts, you look at what's coming down the pipeline, and you know when you're asking too much of someone, because not every episode is going to be the same, and you can't, you've got to be mindful of either anticipating overtime, things like that, like giving people the tools or bringing in extra support to deal with deadlines that might be unrealistic. Mm-hmm. So I do try to be sensitive to that as well. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, in my time, I've had some tough conversations. And with Union Studios, there is a setup where you have to give people warnings, and there's a schedule of that process. So it's not like you can just fire someone right away. Like, again, it's giving them the chance to succeed or fail. And hopefully you also have your showrunner supporting you in those conversations. And luckily, I haven't had to have too many of them. I've been really fortunate in having really good, solid teams and people who are really committed to what they're doing. And again, like I said, I just try to also be aware of when an artist might be expected to do too much, more than is fair. Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So when you're putting together a team, like for your production team, because mm-hmm. you work closer with the production team than the artist most of the time.
Right.
What, like, do you look for? Like, how do you make a group that you feel like will jive together?
Right. Yeah. Chemistry is really important. Ultimately, I do give a lot of latitude to the production manager if I happen to have one, because that person is really in the trenches with the PCs and PAs. I certainly weigh in, but in general, I will let it be their decision, and I will support them with that decision. Certainly, I like people with the right experience, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be experience on an animated show. It's just experience with the software, and just kind of a resume that reflects some organizational abilities, things like that. So those are the key things I look for. And then, you know, you want someone who's going to play well with others. I kind of like hiring people who are artists and are kind of looking to get their foot in the door in the hopes they may be able to parlay it into an art position eventually. I feel like as long as they can give me a year commitment, unless, you know, they're just like a superstar and we have to put them into an artist role, but if they can dedicate themselves to production, I think that helps them get the lay of the land and understand just the mechanics of producing mm-hmm. a show. But I also like people that, because they're artists, they have that sensibility and understand what kind of pressure the artists are under. So they know, they too have that intuitive nature about, okay, maybe I shouldn't bug this person until after lunch. Let me let them kind of get into their zone. And then I'll go and see how they're doing on the episode that's due in 2 days, things like that. So I do like hiring people who come from an art school, have an art background, and have a real affection for animation and just kind of creative pursuits. So
very nice.
Yeah.
I know not all producers feel that way.
Yeah, I know. And it's you know, that's fine. I mean, you work with what you're comfortable with, but I've found it really beneficial. So,
I agree. I feel like that was an asset for me in getting the work I've gotten.
Absolutely.
Because, like, it's a different language that they speak sometimes.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. And like you said, I mean, you are going to encounter eccentric personalities. And if you're too rigid, it's just not going to fly. So I think there's a real positive to having artists. And that was one really good thing about Nickelodeon. They had an internship program, they still do. Mm-hmm. And so I've seen interns just come up through that and become PAs And eventually, I mean, one of the interns I worked with is now, I think, the supervising director on Star. So, oh, wow. So it's a great path to success. And I do think there's a benefit for artists to have. It helps. It also helps give artists an understanding of what production is going through, so that when you do become an artist, hopefully you're a little sensitive to the pressures of deadlines and so forth. Yeah. So
definitely,
hopefully.
So you've been a line producer and you've been a producer. What is the differences and similarities under those two?
You know, they're really, I was thinking about this question. There's not a big difference in my mind. Producer can reflect a lot of different things. Like when I was a producer I first became a producer at Nickelodeon, and that was a few years into being a line producer. And in a way it was an acknowledgement of my experience. Like after a certain point, Nickelodeon gave me that title, as they did other line producers who had similar experience and had put in a number of years and had worked on really successful shows. So I was, you know, certainly flattered by that. And it's an important title for me to have. But essentially I still do line producer duties. Sometimes the producer I worked with, Lisa Melby, on Land Before Time, she was also a producer on the project, and her responsibilities had more to do with creative and making sure that the story was tracking, that the vocal performances were what we were looking for. But because of how she is, and also the director on that project, Davis Doy, who was just a dream to work for, they both were very collaborative. So I felt like they welcomed my opinions whenever I had them. And I, you know, I try not to stick my nose in it too much, but every now and then it's nice to be tapped for some of your creative opinions. So really, I think at this point for me in animation, it reflects my level of experience, because now I've been in it for 20 years. So, and then there's just, I mean, the other thing about it is it does matter when awards are given out, and, you know, there could be worse things in my life than winning an Emmy. And I don't believe, unless the rules have changed, if you're a line producer, you're not eligible. If you're a producer, you're eligible. Mm-hmm. And I do think good production people, good producers / line producers, also have a big part in a show's success. So I think it's great. I've seen a lot of my colleagues acknowledged, like on the show we were just talking about, that our mutual friend Jen is on, Kung Fu Panda. Mm-hmm. And that's really exciting. So I shamelessly admit I wouldn't mind being considered if that ever came to be. So that's really, to me, the difference.
I mean, with the awards, I mean, that's not why we do what we do, but I mean, it's important. Also, it makes you look good for future employment.
Absolutely. You know? Well,
nice. Thank you for all your hard work.
Well, and it's, I mean, and it's a huge honor. I know some people don't care about awards. I certainly don't live or die by them, but it's nice. It is nice to be acknowledged. Mm-hmm. And it can be a little deflating when a lot of your key crew members do get that nomination, but you as the producer, because you're labeled a line producer, don't get the nomination. And again, I do think it's a critical role to helping a show achieve that success to even get nominated. So, I think I don't think it's asking for too much, especially for someone like me and, again, many of my friends I came up with who have been doing it for as long as we have. So, but I'm still happy when any show I'm on wins any awards. And that was neat about Fairly Odd Parents, because I think Ernie Gilbert won an Annie when I was on it. Larry Murphy, who's a background designer, he won an Emmy. Dave Thomas won an Annie. I'm sure now they've probably won multiple Annies. And it's really gratifying to see that happen. So, yeah.
So when you were at NIC in, you know, the Butch Hartman empire,
yes.
Were you producing, like, all of his projects and the shorts?
Yes. It was pretty bananas. When I look back now, it is one of those how did we do that kind of realizations. But again, just to go back to that idea of hiring the best and get out of the way, on both productions, I had really good production managers. So it just trickled down from there. And Butch is amazing. The fact that he could do it just impacted the rest of us. Like, we all followed his lead, as you do with any show. It all comes down to the leadership and who's at the top. And he is so focused and he's so decisive. So while it was a lot of work, especially when we had both shows, I mean, the normal series will be in pre-production and post-production for, you know, an overlap of a few months at any given time. So to have two shows that way, it was a little nutty, but everyone was at the top of their game, and we had two separate crews, but it was all under one umbrella. And it was kind of nice too, because crews could help out. We could help out each other when necessary. So it was a lot of work, but I also got a lot of support from Mark Taylor, who was the general manager at the time at Nickelodeon. So somehow we made it happen. But I think having two really good separate production crews made a big difference as far as my perception goes and what I was dealing with, because it's always nice when you have a production staff and really good production managers that you can trust. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Every time I think about all the shows that has come out of that guy,
yeah,
I just like want to know how he divides his brain space.
I know.
To be like focused.
Yeah. I think he sleeps like 4 hours a night, if that. But I would remember, I'd come in some mornings, and he would have left me a message at 1 a.m, and it was about something important but kind of minute. And I was just amazed that it was even registering on his brain. But he's really incredible in that way, and I admire him so much for just that ability. Mm-hmm. He's hands-on, which is great, but he's not a micromanager either. But he does have high expectations of his crew, and people have to kind of step up and deliver. Mm-hmm. And luckily, in most cases, everyone did. So,
nice.
Yeah. And it's exciting. I mean, his shows were always really successful, and that was fun to see them do well in the ratings and generate a big fan base. We always hung up our fan art, which was a blast to see. I mean, Danny Phantom is still kind of a cult classic.
You keep up on what's going on in the industry. Like, how so? Do you, like, read, like, a certain magazine or websites? Like, how do you keep up with what's going on?
Well, admittedly, I keep more informed on the live action side of things, just reading Deadline Hollywood and Variety and Hollywood Reporter, just the basic trades. I do check in. I mean, the benefit of being on Facebook is you've got all these animation friends posting articles from Animation Magazine or Cartoon Brew. So I do get bits and pieces about what's going on in the animation industry, as well as just what's going on with my colleagues in the animation industry, and that's really neat. But yeah, I just basically read the trades and you know, not religiously, but I'll check them out just to make sure I'm somewhat aware of what's happening. Mm-hmm. And then I also like to go to film festivals when I can and try to stay current. I really love independent films, and so I always like to see what's going on. I go to the LA Film Festival regularly, and then I go to the Austin Film Festival every October, or I have gone for the past several years because they also have a writers' conference, and that's been really fun to actually sit in on panels with just film writers, TV writers, showrunners, and actually there's a huge animation presence there too. Pixar usually has a panel or two with a lot of high-level executives. I was there one year when John Lasseter was honored, mm-hmm. and Nickelodeon has a presence. They usually have a panel, and they always sponsor a happy hour, so... So yeah, so that's a good festival to check out each year. Yeah.
Yeah, and you write about it and put it on your blog, usually.
Right? When I'm, I know I've been terribly remiss in updating. I know, and I actually have some entries I've been thinking about. It's just sort of sitting down and purging it out. But
obviously, you'd rather write your scripts,
right?
Than
right.
Blog
yeah.
posts.
I don't know why the blog post. I mean, it shouldn't be as much of a hurdle as it sometimes is. I think, too, honestly, Cassie, like sometimes the world, I mean, the world is nuts right now. There's just so much going on, and there's a lot of really tragic, troubling news out there. So I feel a little... It just feels kind of like superfluous for me to be like, oh, and my screenplay, you know, was a quarter finalist in the Iowa State, whatever. You know, it's just like, big deal. I don't know. I just, it's like, what will my opinion bring to anything? There are so many deeper issues happening right now that I think people should probably be reading about. But then part of me feels like, Deirdre, it would just be good to write it because in some ways it's just a good diary, just a journal to have, even if no one aside from you and maybe my sister is reading it. It's a good record of where I'm at and how I'm feeling in my career. So maybe eventually I'll get back to it.
I hope you do. I mean,
thank you.
I've had this kind of internal struggle with entertainment and media and stuff because it does seem superfluous.
Yes. Yeah.
It seems kind of selfish, you know, and, but then I think about my time at, like, Disneyland when I was a sketch artist down there, and mm-hmm. I really got to see the end effect of all these characters and all these stories touching people.
Right.
And it is a big deal, you know. At times, like, it's not as important as what's happening right now, but it's definitely something that can help people through things.
Yeah, yeah.
It also matters what you're, like, creating the content about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that's hit me with, like, some of the shows and movies out there right now, at least in animation, it's like, like, we could be hitting some more universal notes.
Right,
but at the same
right.
time, maybe it's nice that it's not connected, so yeah, people can forget about, like,
right.
the terrible days that they're having.
Yeah, because, I mean, for a lot of people, entertainment is escapism, so you're right. And you bring up a good point, too. Like, maybe I'm sure there are people out there who... I have blogs I like to check out that are, you know, about writing or whatever, and nothing more serious than that, but they're informative or something relatable. So I understand what you're saying. And ultimately, it's probably just because I'm lazy that I don't do it more often, but
I just like being able to, like, read about, you know, some facts that you present, but also, like, your experience of them.
Uh-huh.
And I love making diary comics, and that's, like, probably the stupidest
thing. I love that stuff, though. Yeah. No, that's great.
Because I feel like, I mean, that's all you really have. And, like, yeah. I think about life a lot, and I'm like, what's the point? Like, I don't get
right.
But, like, you're only given one life, so do the things that make you happy, and it'll probably touch someone along the way somehow, you know?
Well, I love what you're saying, too, about the work you did at Disneyland and how that's really meaningful to the people who bought it and wanted it. So, yeah.
It was always purchased out of love because they either
right.
that character reminded them of themselves, of a loved one.
Yeah.
Or they're getting it as a gift because it reminded them of someone or a better right. time in their life and, like... I want to retire in that same job.
Uh-huh.
Like, I've always wanted to work in animation, so I was like, gotta go. See you guys later.
So are you going to circle back? Is that what
so.
You think?
I cool. hope so. But at the same time, I don't know. TV is such a great platform for storytelling.
Yes,
and like,
yes.
You know, making characters and representation means a lot to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, more than I ever thought it would.
Yeah.
I was like, blah, whatever. But no, it's like a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, like... We just saw Ghostbusters this week.
Ah, cool. And how did you like it?
I loved it.
I haven't seen it yet, but I plan to.
Yeah, it was really good. And, I mean, I understand everyone who, like, hates it without having seen it already.
Oh, my God.
But, like...
What is up with that? I don't get it.
But I watched it with, like, It's, like, something completely new. New characters, new story, right? And I love all those performers.
Yes,
and
they're awesome.
I really wish that it was made when I was a kid with the same people because, like, there's this one... Well, first of all these women are so different.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and they're not played up because, oh, they're pretty or anything. And they're characters.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But Holtzman in particular, Kate McKinnon's character.
Yeah, she's so great.
Oh, so good.
And I bet she's fantastic.
I feel like no matter what your sexual identity is...
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could see yourself in her.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm straight, and I saw myself in her.
Uh-huh.
My friend is non-binary, and she saw herself in her.
That's
you know?
Great, yeah.
So it's pretty amazing.
Because the statistics are still pretty dismal, mm-hmm. and it's staggering to me because women make up 50% of our population, and usually the audience, when you
yeah.
look at stats at the end of the year, it's usually a little over 50%. Have been women. So there's an audience and I get, you know, frustrated that a film like Bridesmaids comes along and it's suddenly this big anomaly and it doesn't have to be. There mm-hmm. there are audiences out there for this stuff, so.
Yeah. So like there's usually talk about women directors in film. Like how do you feel it is in animation?
Well, still not great, but it's nice to see more women getting into it. I loved working with Darren on Star, and she was the showrunner creator of that series, and or still is. It's still going, Deirdre. But you know, this is a very talented young woman who was given this big opportunity, and she took it really seriously. It first seasons are usually a challenge, and I was always impressed with her maturity in meetings and how articulate she could be. And there were a lot of women on that crew now that I think about it, and I do hope people like Darren. And, oh, I'm forgetting her name, but she did Steven Universe.
Oh, Rebecca Sugar.
Yes, Rebecca Sugar. I know Aliki is doing a show at DreamWorks now, and she's incredible. So it's nice to see some of these women get more involved. And I think another plus is the idea of social media, because now everyone has a platform to really talk about what they're doing. And hopefully that is inspiring to other women. But, it still needs to change. And I encounter it just in the scripts I'm trying to sell because I like writing in different genres, but I would say in general, the common thread in my work is that I always try to create really dynamic, complex, three-dimensional female characters. And a lot of my scripts are female-driven, but unfortunately, it's not what gets studios excited unless Jennifer Lawrence happens to be attached to it. So it's still an uphill battle, and it's one I'll continue to try to climb and fight. So we have a ways to go, but I think if we can just keep being vocal and also keep supporting other women, and that comes too in just who you staff, who gets hired, and who you support. So
this episode is part one of two. In this episode, you have heard Deirdre's experience as an animation producer. In next week's episode, you'll hear about screenwriting, what she has done to sharpen those skills and go after opportunities. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a review on iTunes. It helps us reach a wider audience and share these stories. In sharing these female voices, we strive not only to help pave a path for aspiring women professionals, but to build a community and safe space for female creatives to support and empower one another. Like life, working in these industries is not a destination, but a journey of hopping from project to project. So I think we can probably all use the support. Want to chat? We're on Twitter at Ink, the letter N, Pink Girls, on Facebook at Ink and Pink Girls Podcast, or email us at inkandpaintgirlspodcast@gmail.com. The Ink and Paint Girls Podcast is brought to you by me, creator and host Cassie Soliday, and produced by Val Patrone in sunny Burbank, California. Music composed by TV's Kyle. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Girls Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.